here is straight. There's a place to find all the answers. AM Shortwave Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is the National Intel Report. I'm your host, John Stadtmiller, coming to you live from the studios of Republic Broadcasting Network on this Monday, the 3rd of December, 2007. On today's program, we can only steal him for an hour because he's got several radio programs that he's got scheduled out. Reverend Ted Pike will join us in just a couple of minutes. And we're going to be talking about SB 1959. And we have some good news, but I'll tell you what. How is the best way to put this? A little bit of good news is good, but in order to make the good news real happy and real news, I mean based in reality, we've got to make sure this hate crime bill is dead now and for all time. And that's kind of a misnomer because it'll never die, because we have people in this country that hate free speech. They want to tag it that people are being injured. You know, the old sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Well, they're trying to make you believe that the words are now sticks and stones, and that you can cause severe emotional damage to people, just by using words. Well, words, folks, is our language, written and spoken, and truth lies in the spoken and written word. That's what they're after. So we'll talk to Ted about that here in just a couple of minutes. And also, while I have him here, we're going to give out the numbers. And folks, you know, this is a participatory type of situation. You know, we have a network. We talk about things. We suggest that you do things. Well, just not suggest. We ask that you do things. And one of the things, make sure that this hate crime bill is dead this time around. It's been attached to military spending bills. And evidently, there's a catfight going on about it. But we need to put a stake in this vampire and put it back in its box. It'll be resurrected. Just wait till tomorrow morning, you know, or tomorrow night when the sun sets. The vampire shall rise again. Well, we'll just have to put another stake in it and keep doing it until the vampire gives up. It runs out of juice because it's not been sucking people's blood. Even vampires have to live. And also, it's true, folks. I mean, what can I say? Also, I want to get into this with Ted about the Jewish activists and how they created communism. This was an article that he wrote this past June. And he's also written some articles just recently about, well, the ADL. And who do you suppose might be behind the hate crime bill? That's right. It's the American Defamation League. You know, the protectors of all. You know, I'm still a little confused here. You know, why do we have Hanukkah in this country? We have 300 million people, and less than 1% of the population of this country are actually Jewish. So why is this every year we go through this thing? Should we have a manger scene? Should we have Jesus and Mary and Joseph? And, well, what about the menorah? Okay, what about it? Less than 1% of this population in this country is Jewish, and you're asking me where your menorah is? I don't know. Why don't you check in Israel? I'm sure they've got a lot of them. At any rate, we'll be right back with Ted Pike. News on SB 1959. You saw what the Congress did, right? What was it, 404-6 against? Well, not so with the United States Senate. We'll be right back. By the way, before I bring up Ted Pike, just a programming note here. People want to know what happened to Mark Dankoff. Mark Dankoff is on hiatus for a while. He'll be coming back as a guest host on Mike Piper's show or Heshen Talawi's program. He has had a lot of things going on in his personal life with his wife and his mother. Really not good stuff, and he had to take some time off to deal with that. And I will say that Mark Dankoff, I really like this guy. He prepared endlessly for each two-hour show that he did. And it just took up a lot of his time, which needed to be delegated to other important health matters with his family. So Mark Dankoff is on temporary hiatus. He will be coming back to the network one day when he clears his stuff up. So I'd never mentioned anything about that, and I just got an email from him, and just wanted to let you folks know that. At any rate, I've got Ted Pike online with me today. Hello, Mr. Pike. Reverend, how are you doing?
Well, pretty good. Thanks for having me, John.
Well, like I've told you repeatedly, anytime you've got something of great import here, the airwaves are yours, and we've got a tad bit of good news for people today, do we not?
Yeah, we certainly do. I've written several email alerts over the last several weeks about an alleged rebellion among Republican House members and Democrats, something like 180 Republican House members and 20 liberal Democrats are threatening not to vote for the big military arms appropriations bill, which, of course, has Senator Kennedy's hate bill tagged onto it. Of course, they have very, very different reasons. The Republicans can't stand the hate bill. And these Democrats are very, very angry that the appropriations bill doesn't have terms, demands in it, requiring withdrawal from Iraq. And the Congressional Quarterly confirmed this just this morning. They are saying that actually in conference on this bill, which is H.R. 1585, they're saying there's a big debate now. They say that all the spending issues are taken care of, but they're stranded over this issue of whether to keep the hate bill on the military appropriations bill or actually strip it off, because they're afraid. You know, the people, Heartland America, is saying, well, why aren't our troops in Iraq and Afghanistan and around the world getting the necessary supplies and munitions and food and clothing in order to keep them safe in hostile territory? And if these liberal Democrats are dragging their feet too much about passing an arms bill, keeping our young men and women safe overseas, that's a really bad PR in a presidential race coming up.
Ted, let's face it. If the Democrats are really serious about the welfare of these troops that are sitting over in Iraq for humpteen, I don't know how many tours, being inundated with depleted uranium, still taking part in an illegal war, the best thing that the Democrats could do, and I hasten to use Republican and the name or the term conservative in the same sentence, as well as Democrats and liberals.
Yes,
that's still a polarizing thing. People that are Democrats don't think that they're too liberal; they think they're progressive. And the conservative side or the Republican side, well, this is the New Deal. So
yes,
you know. But here's my question: if the Democrats were so concerned about this, why did they resoundingly pass 1955 out of the House?
That's a very good question. I think what we have to admit, of course, is that all of this is posturing. The Democratic Party, of course, is primarily funded and controlled by Zionist Jewish lobbies and so on, and they are very interested in keeping us in Iraq. And I think regardless of whether even Jewish members of Congress protest the war, it's going to go along very nicely according to the greater plan, greater decrees from the real AIPAC Zionist masters of Congress. But the thing is, how's this going to sound on a soundbite if Democratic Senator so-and-so is not at least doing his part to keep your young man or woman safe in Iraq? And so What they're looking at here is a possible backlash against congressional foot dragging of providing more money for the war in Iraq. And of course, just before the congressional recess at Thanksgiving, President Bush was repulsed in his request for $50 billion more, and congressional people were saying, not necessarily leaders, but members of Congress, the liberals were saying they weren't going to give him any more spending money until the first of the year. But there's pressure on them to get 1585 passed, get those troops supplied, and they're afraid that if this hate bill is retained on the arms bill, that there's going to be this big reaction. You see, if we have 180 Republicans against the arms bill in the House and 20 Democrats. We're getting pretty close to even Stephen there. They're afraid this rebellion is going to widen. And that's why it's very important that people tomorrow morning, first thing, you call at least your member of the House and let him know, him or her know, in no uncertain terms, that you will support them if they vote against the arms bill, hate bill package. And the Congressional Quarterly says that as early as this Thursday, there can be a vote. The bill will be on the floor of the House this Thursday. There can be a vote. Now, if that, I frankly am skeptical whether the Democratic leadership, I think they have a pretty strong loyalty to the hate bill, and they're probably going to keep it on and take their chances. And the President Bush, of course, is under enormous pressure now. It's a full 4 months since he was supposed to have this arms bill money. And he's under a lot of pressure, and it may well be that they'll take their chances, put this bill out before the House, and take a vote on it, and it could very well pass. And that's why we have to put pressure on them right now.
Okay. Now, 1955 passed the House. It was, 404 for the hate bill and 6 against.
Well, the 1955 is the homegrown terrorism bill, and what that is very different from the bill that we're talking about here. That's a bill to establish a federal commission, which will sit for a year and a half to delve into this problem of streaming hate that presumably comes over alternative talk radio. And, of course, a federal commission has tremendous powers to make recommendations for passage of new legislation.
It's a bad thing to have a talk show host confused because he doesn't know what he's talking about. Let me digress here for a second. We're talking about two separate bills.
Yes, we are.
Let's make this perfectly clear here.
There's the hate crimes bill, which is Senator Kennedy and Smith's bill,
right,
which was tagged on to the Senate version on September 27th and was tagged on to the House version on May 3rd. So it's passed. The hate crimes bill and the military arms appropriations bill have both passed, and they've gone into conference now. And it's just coming out of conference. You see, the conference is a reconciliation between a House version of the bills and a Senate version of the bills. They're getting agreement, but you see, even when the conferees between the House and the Senate come up with a final version, it's still got to have another vote by the House and Senate. This is one of the wonderful safeguards and checks and balances of our Constitution. Got to have one more vote, and now there's the opportunity here to not only perhaps strip it out in conference or actually reject it by a floor vote in the House and the Senate. So this is a tremendous opportunity, which I believe that our founding fathers, in the grace of God, are giving us to have another vote on the hate bill. And I'll just stay on that for just a minute. If it is approved, if the hate bill, arms bill package is approved, let's say on Thursday, then it goes straight to the president's desk, and he's under tremendous pressure to get that money out because it's four months overdue, and he's been rejected in previous efforts to get more money, interim money, from Congress.
But it's also in Bush's interest to sign the hate bill because most of the people in this country hate George Bush now.
Well, the thing is, he's made some pretty solemn promises to the religious right, which are very important players in this next election. And if he offends the religious right too egregiously by turning his back on his promises, regardless of the economic military pressures on him, he's taking a real chance of the religious right bucking and departing the Republican Party and going after you-know-who. And so this is he's under pressure from both sides, but this is something we can't take a chance on. And as I say, tomorrow morning, people have just simply got to call their member of the House, a representative, whether he's a conservative or a liberal. It doesn't make any difference because some of the liberals and most of the conservative Republicans now are saying they are going to go against the arms appropriation hate bill package. So let them know that far from the Heartland America thinking, well, if you vote against the arms appropriations bill, you're not voting for supplies for our troops. Let them know that you support them in a no vote against the arms appropriation hate bill package.
Yeah, gosh. And then, now, you know, I'm just sitting here, my head spinning, because wasn't it in the interim elections last year that, in fact, this is what the Democrats ran on, that they were going to get us out of Iraq, get us out of the war, and they're appropriating money. Okay, now that's one issue. The other issue, of course, is how many people that are in the Democrat side of the aisle are staunch supporters of the hate crime legislation, because they believe in their heart of hearts that, you know, it's words and not only sticks and stones that do break people's bones. We've got to crack this thing and put it to rest for once and for all. Hold on, Mr. Pike. Reverend Ted Pike will be right back right after this. By the way, along the lines of supporting our troops here, Sears and Roebuck has done a pretty amazing thing. You know, a lot of people want to know how corporations are treating their employees. Well, the employees that were called up for military duty that work for Sears, by law, they're required to hold their jobs open and available, but nothing more. Usually people take a big pay cut and lose benefits as a result of being called up. Now, Sears is voluntarily paying the difference in salaries and maintaining all benefits, including medical insurance and bonus programs for all called-up reservist employees for the past 2 years. And this is the email that came back, and it's been verified. This came back from Bill Thorne, Sears Customer Care, in request to, is this a real deal? He says, thank you for contacting Sears. The information is factual. We appreciate your positive feedback. Sears regards service to our country as one of the greatest sacrifices our young men and women can make. We're happy to do our part to lessen the burden they bear at this time. So there you have it from Sears. I just thought I'd slide that in, Ted.
Yeah, well, you know, we may disagree with the Iraq war and our involvement in the Mideast, largely on behalf of Israel, but we do have a solemn duty to make sure our young men and women are given the very best protections and guarantees that they can come home safely after this debacle is over.
Well, and over it should be. Over it should be now.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Now, I checked out the numbers that we had here, and one of the 800 numbers for the Senate and Congress was the House of Representatives was bad. It went to some fact-sounding thing, and then it came on with a voice message that obviously wasn't the was not the switchboard for the Capitol. Now, here's the two numbers I have, and Ted, if you've got any numbers, please throw them in. These are both 800 numbers, verified 614-2803 and 851-6437. Do you have any other ones?
I've been using the 851-6437. It has worked pretty good. Once in a while it doesn't work, and I just go over to the toll number.
Okay.
But that's been working for at least a year now.
All right, good. All right, then it's confirmed then. Both of those 800 numbers, folks, and please write these down. You know, this is not to be served up as entertainment for you. Just to keep you abreast of the latest assaults on the Republic here. We're a interactive group of people here connecting with other good Americans to bring about positive changes in this country. So I'm going to repeat these 800 numbers again, and please, please, folks, use those numbers tomorrow. Congress is closed right now. Well, it's been many people's suspicions, Ted, that Congress has always had its door open, but nobody was home. Here's the 800 numbers, 614-2803 and 851-6437. What should people...
Actually, that other one is 1-877-851-6437.
Oh, okay. I'm glad you made that correction, because I have it on my screen. You want to correct that as we're speaking here? Okay, 877-851-6437. And the other is an 800 number. I verified it. It's good. I just talked to the switchboard during break. 800-614-2803. All right. When they're on the phone tomorrow, Now, are you saying that we should call our senators and our House members, or
the issue isn't critical quite yet in the Senate, although it could be very quickly. It would be a good investment to call your two senators from your state. But right now, you see, we're having an imminent vote, even as early as Thursday,
okay,
on whether to approve the conference version of the hate and arms bill package. And so it's really important. We've only got a day or two now to get those calls through to our House member. We're only talking about one call, folks, just one call there to, as a constituent to your House member. It doesn't make any difference. They can be rank liberal or whatever.
Okay.
Your chances
are
good of persuading them not to vote for the military appropriations bill and the hate bill.
Okay. Now, this is what you want people to say in their message to our Congress critters tomorrow?
Yes. Actually, the proper title for this bill that you want them not to vote for is the National Defense Appropriations Act. And that bill number is H.R. 1585. Again, that's the National Defense Appropriations Act, H.R. 1585, with the hate bill attached. And you see, we have no quarrel with the Department of Defense Act. It's kind of the victim of Senator Kennedy attaching his hate bill like a lamprey on the side of it, you see.
Yeah.
So we're not trying to persuade the members of the House to just defeat the Defense Appropriations Bill. We want, if they're going to put them through together, if the conference and the leadership of the House decides in the next day or so that they're going to have a hate bill and an arms bill together as an incongruous duo, then we are going to have to protest that, because that will mean that passage of the arms bill means passage of the hate bill. And then that goes to the president, and he's the dilemma of whether to supply the troops by passing the arms bill or defy Congress and send it back to the House, make more delays, more problems in the months ahead.
I still have a dilemma, though. I mean, call me too logical or call me simplistic. You know, I like to boil things down to their essences. I'm still a little foggy on the issue. How could the House have passed H.R. 1955, and there was a slew of Republicans still in there that voted on it, and only six people voted against it?
That is an enigma.
Yeah, it is. All right, let's take this break. We'll come right back right after this with Reverend Ted Pike. Here's the deal. There you go. Tomorrow morning, folks, remember, there's a one-hour time difference between us and the Congress critters in Washington, D.C. And you need to call these two numbers and talk to your Congress critters. And since this is toll-free, spend a little bit more time and call the other critters. Oh, that's right, the ones in the Senate. We only have 100 of those. We have 435 of the Congress critters. But at any rate, call them and tell them, the National Reform Appropriations Act, not a bad thing. Just strip out the hate bill. Okay? Just dump it. Get rid of it. It wouldn't hurt if you let them know exactly how you feel about the sticks and stones analogy I gave you. Because that used to be the maxim for years and years and years. You know, if I call Reverend Ted Pike a conspiracy theorist and a wingnut, Ted, did that just hurt you?
No, it doesn't. Hey, by the way, that's the National Defense Appropriations Act.
National Defense Appropriations Act.
Yeah, that's the big one right now. We have several other pieces of legislation. We have the ENDA bill, you know, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, which did pass the House about a month
ago.
Ted,
let me cut you off here, because I don't want to confuse people. The National Defense Appropriations Act is HB 1585.
H.R.
1585. H.R.
1585.
Okay, now that I've got my mind wrapped around that one. All right.
And we have a couple of others. One of them is the ENDA, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. That should be coming through the Senate maybe next week or after that or whatever. Not quite sure. Also, there's the Homegrown Terrorism Act you've been referring to, which is SB 1959. That establishes a federal commission. It doesn't actually make a law as of yet, banning or vilifying alternative talk radio, but that's the ultimate target of that.
It
but
is.
those are a little bit down on the priority list. The main thing is we got to take this opportunity to give ourselves a second chance to defeat this hate bill. I never thought we'd have this chance. I thought it'd go right out of conference and be rubber stamped by the House and the Senate and go to the president. But here, according to, I believe, a divine providence and mercy on us, we're giving another chance to impact the legislative process in the House of Representatives immediately. Now, maybe next week it'll be before the Senate. Probably will be. I'll have to be back on the radio and get people calling the Senate. But the main thing is make sure that House member is called tomorrow morning.
All right. And it probably wouldn't hurt, folks, just to put the little bug in your ear, since there's so much consternation among our Congress critters now. Is it because their consciences are about them, Ted, or is it because they're just getting so much heat?
Well, I think the great majority of Democratic members of the House are lackeys of the Democratic machine, the Jewish-funded and Jewish-controlled Zionist machine. And I believe that this whole protest and self-righteousness and opposition to the war is largely a tactic in order to create dissatisfaction with Republican leadership so that they can bring a Democrat into the White House next year. I mean, it's not out of conscience, I don't believe. They're political animals and very opportunistic. And here's a situation, though, where some Democrats evidently have less loyalty to the hate bill, and they are willing to buck the arms bill and are willing to allow the hate bill to be stripped off. And the decision about whether the hate bill is stripped off in conference is largely a decision made by the Democratic leadership, even more than the conferees. They're going to instruct them whether to keep that hate bill on the arms bill or throw it over. Now, we should make it very clear that if the hate bill is actually rejected by conference in the next couple of days, which I certainly hope it will be, nevertheless, Kennedy and Smith, they're not done. They can add the hate bill to another bill, or they can move it forward as standalone legislation.
You know what I think we should do, Ted, along with this? I think what we should do the next time I have you on is that we should give all the numbers to Kennedy's, and it's not only Washington, D.C. They have their home offices in their states, as well as, I assume we're talking about Lamar Smith here?
Are you talking about, in what regard? I don't quite understand.
No. I'm saying the hate bill was crafted by Kennedy and Smith.
Oh, it's not Lamar Smith. It's Senator Gordon Smith of Oregon.
Smith. Okay, Gordon Smith.
Yeah, he's a Mormon bishop here in Oregon who was elected as a Republican in order to, you know, we thought we had a good Christian family values guy, and then he has morphed over into a pseudo-Republican liberal.
Well, it's okay. The Mormons think that they're in position to take over after World War III starts anyhow. You think they buried all that information that had all the libraries in the mountains down there in Utah because they were just good librarians? No. At any rate, the hate crimes bill, I never want to be impeded from calling Hillary Clinton a cast-iron communist on this program.
Yeah.
Okay? All right. Another subject I want to get into with you because, and I'll tell you what, a lot of talk show hosts out there will not cover this because they're afraid of the big bad ADL.
Yes.
I personally find the ADL and all of its JDL and all of its fringe members, all these Jewish congresses and everything else, to be abhorrent to America and its way of life and free speech and free anything else. But the thing here with communism and socialism, now, you wrote an article back in June on this, and I wanted to highlight this. We got up roughly about 20 minutes to do this. And you even, at the beginning of the story, you tie this in as the Christian persecuting federal hate bill dangerously waits in the Senate Judiciary Committee. The Jewish Forward says most of the American Jewish community has mobilized to get it passed.
Yes.
They're pressuring Bush not to honor his pledge to evangelicals to veto it. I don't see where a pledge George Bush gives to anybody for any good reason is, you know, I mean, the guy goes back on his waffles, he goes back on his word, he's a double speaker and he's a liar. But aside from that, you asked in your article here, what's the problem? And I want to go through this here, Ted, and let people know where socialism and communism came from in the first place.
Yes.
Please. Continue.
Oh, yes. Well, historically, you see, the so-called Jews of the 18th century, we're talking about the 1700s going into the 1800s, they were, most of these so-called Jews were really descendants of Khazars, which were people of a Central Eurasian nation who converted to Judaism in about the 9th century A.D., and in the process of time, they forgot that they were Gentiles and began to consider themselves children of Abraham, and they moved up into Eastern Europe and became more devoted followers of the Talmud and the Kabbalah even than the more authentic Jews to the West, the Sephardic or Sephardic Oriental. Anyway, out of Eastern Europe, as we get toward the beginning of the 20th century, let's stay in the 19th century, as these Jews began moving westward, they brought with them all of this Kabbalistic revolutionary lore, especially out of the Kabbalah. And this taught that Jews had a mission to overthrow the Gentile governments, overthrow Christianity, overthrow the existing order. And so in the time of the French Revolution around 1787, we find these Jewish Kabbalistic wonder workers coming out of Poland, people like Saint Germain, Cagliostro, Frank, Falk, even perhaps Weishaupt, creating these subversive, super secret Illuminati type of organizations, often embedded within Freemasonry, Grand Orient Freemasonry in France, the Scottish Rite in Scotland, English Masonry, and so on. And one of the guiding lights of this was Moses Mendelssohn, who was the grandfather of the famous composer Felix Mendelssohn. He was a dedicated Kabbalist, and what he taught was he said that Jews should pattern themselves after Moses and Aaron, who went down to Egypt and they overthrew the capitalistic oppressor of the proletariat, meaning the children of Israel who were slaves in Egypt. They should go out, and Judaism should not just be a spiritual religion, it should be a political effort to overthrow the capitalistic power structure, the establishment in the world, meaning capitalism and Christianity. And so during the 19th century, Jews became the leaders in all of the great revolutions of Europe, the revolutions of 1830, 1849, the Commune in Paris in 1870. And then finally, we find around the turn of the century, the Jews leading the abortive 1905 revolution in Russia. And finally, Jews absolutely saturating the Bolshevik revolution in 1917. We also find that huge Jewish financial institutions like Kuhn and Loeb in New York, which is now Chase Manhattan, the Hamburgs in Germany, the Warburgs in Germany, the Rothschilds in England, and so on, all contributed monetarily to this great cause of overthrowing this basically Christian government, the Romanov dynasty in Russia. And then basically out of that communist, the Bolshevik upheaval, we find radiating out of Russia, especially into America, the pioneers of socialist and liberal movements, especially during the New Deal, where they were welcomed with open arms by FDR and Eleanor. FDR said some of his best friends were communists, and they infested the liberal structure and have basically been there ever since.
You have in your article here, which I've heard this before, I've read it before, and this was out of Gary Allen's book, None Dare Call It Conspiracy, and he talks about the Jewish financiers and Max Warburg in Germany, Jacob Schiff in America, who provided millions to arm and subsidize Jewish revolutionaries returning to Russia under the leadership of Trotsky. Now, Schiff, the head of the international banking firm of Kuhn, Loeb and Company, now you're Chase Manhattan.
Yes.
They changed names, but it's still the same parties, was particularly influential. Quoting the New York Journal America on February 3rd of 1949, today it is estimated by Jacob's grandson, John Schiff, that the old man sank about $20 million for the final triumph of Bolshevism in Russia. Now, think about this, folks. The average wage for hard labor back in this time period was a couple of dollars a day. So $20 million was a lot of money.
Yes.
And if you think of just the seeds that were planted there through this revolution in Russia, we had the Cold War that Ronnie Reagan fought with dollars and supposedly defeated communism. Think of all the billions and trillions of dollars that went into this Cold War to defeat that which came right out of the banks here in America.
Sure.
To finance the Jewish Bolshevik revolution in Russia.
Yes.
You know, and Ted, on the issue here of Israel, we've got a slight problem here. The Israelis keep wanting to try to take back the land that was never ceded to them. They've illegally occupied parts of Palestine, had little Jewish settlements. There are many people in Palestine that are dying on a daily basis. Their country is in absolute ruins and tatters. But yet we have, George Bush coming out and saying that, well, we need peace in the Middle East. Well, it's never going to happen. First of all, Ted, they've got to understand that Israel is not going to give up land in Palestine come hell or high water or the second coming of Christ himself. They're just not going to do it.
Yeah. Well, you know, even the Balfour Declaration in 1917 was agreed on by the Zionists. The terms of it said that nothing shall compromise the rights of the indigenous inhabitants. Well, the whole Zionist experiment has been one theft of the rights of the indigenous inhabitants for close to a century.
You know, I mean, this is amazing. And Israel just said just recently here that this Annapolis deal here, well, the timelines just aren't right.
Yeah.
And we can't meet those. Look, I'm not buying any of this. And before we go to break, Ted, I've got a question for you here, because you've written about Christmas time and the undue influence of Jews on Christmas. We've got less than what? Maybe 1% of the population in this country that are Jewish. And
something like that.
Yeah. And I'm having a problem here, because we know that the agenda is to get anything to do with Christ, anything to do with conscience of man, I call it, out of the purview of the public out there. But why is it that every Christmas we come around with the Jews wanting the menorah or having any expression of, say, religiousness thrown out of Christmas, but yet they'll stump for the menorah right alongside of the manger scene? But we're dealing with a percent of the population in this country. What gives?
Yeah.
What gives?
Well, I point out in my recent article, which just came out last night, why isn't ADL, if they're so interested in equality and liberty and freedom from discrimination, why aren't they insisting that Israel, during the Hanukkah season, allow manger scenes in the Tel Aviv airport and crosses throughout the country and crescents and stars for the Muslim and even maybe the Palestinian flag flown boldly throughout the country.
Well,
that kind of representation.
Yeah, well, I can surmise and just about guess that will happen when the Jews are out of Palestine.
Yeah.
Which is going to be never.
Sure. Well, the ADL is in a really big thrust now. It's called the program to government and to public schools and to town halls and so on, town councils. The big program now is they're dramatizing what they call the December Dilemma, in which horrors, Jesus Christ and the Christian message is receiving greater emphasis in our society than Kwanzaa and Budai Day and things like that. And this, they consider this a great civil rights violation, which is in violation of the Constitution of the United States and needs to be made right by forcing administrators and public school officials all to not mention Jesus any more than any of these other religious figures.
All right, Ted, I appreciate you coming on the program. I know you've got many more hours of radio to do here, so we appreciate you coming on the broadcast today. And please do keep us posted here on, and I'll give the information again on the other side of the break. But, Reverend, thanks for coming up with us.
Thanks. Just one quick thing. I do have a list.
Okay, hold on 1 second. I'll bring you back right after the break.
Okay.
All right, folks, again, let me just reiterate here before Ted closes out this segment of the first hour of the National Intel Report. Tomorrow morning, okay, call your congressmen, your senators, your congressmen, anybody that will answer the phone. If you don't know who your congressmen are, folks, look it up. Okay, you should know who they are. You should at least know who your senators are, because there's only two per state. But call tomorrow against the hate bill that's attached to H.R. 1585. That's the National Defense Appropriations Act, H.B. 1585. Tell them you're in support of supplying the troops, but you want the hate crime bill stripped out of it. Okay, and you might want to mention SB 1959, not a good deal. Just get rid of it. Americans don't want it. But make your feelings known on the National Defense Appropriations Act, HB 1585. Yeah, pass the doggone thing, but strip the hate bill out of it.
That's right.
All right.
Also, it'd be a wonderful thing if our listeners could do more than just call one House member tomorrow or one or two members of the Senate. At my website, which is truthtellers.org, I have all the members of the House and Senate listed there. And if you use the redial feature on your phone, you can call 40 or 50 members of Congress in only an hour. A tremendous investment for you and your children to do more than just the barest minimum.
All right. And that's truthtellers.org. All right.
Reverend,
anything else?
That's it. Thank you so much for having me, John.
All right. Well, Ted, thank you for all the work that you're doing. I wouldn't know what to do if we didn't have you out there championing the cause of free speech.
Well, as I said before, I couldn't do it without you, John.
Well, we couldn't do it without you, sir, so it's a happy marriage. All right.
I know.
Thank you, Reverend.